Hi, my name is Colt Dodrill. I practice law in Arizona and Nevada. I've been licensed for 15 years, representing institutional clients such as insurers and banks. And we're going to discuss the art and science of hourly attorney billing. I want to start with an introduction of why hourly billing is important. As we all learned from a young age, time is money, and we need to meet or exceed our firm billing requirements. There's an opportunity for professional advancement, and entering and capturing our time will allow us to meet our personal financial goals. We do that by billing more efficiently, and that allows us to spend more time moving our cases forward and less time on entering our time. Time is one thing we don't get back, and we want to make sure that we capture that. Efficient billing is important to reach those goals. According to Yale Law School Career Development Office, you have to work 10 hours just to bill 7. Many attorneys have to bill much more than 7 hours a day to keep their positions and to meet those goals. And if you can't efficiently capture your time, you end up falling behind. Causes you to work nights, work weekends, work holidays, just to meet the minimum standard, and you have to push yourself beyond that to exceed. So it's important to capture your time and be efficient because there's only 24 hours in a day. We start with the ABA model rules of conduct. Rule 1.5A says a lawyer shall not make an agreement for, charge, or collect an unreasonable fee or an unreasonable amount for expenses. Model rule 8.4C says it is professional misconduct for a lawyer to engage in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation. So whenever we make a representation to our clients regarding our time billed, we want to keep these model rules in mind. So we start with the fee agreement, which is a contract between counsel and the client, and those will often define what is billable, what is not, hourly rate, procedures, etc. Now, there are different kinds of fee agreements. There's hourly fee agreements, which is the focus of this presentation. There's also contingent fee agreements that you often see in personal injury cases. And there's flat rate, which is a separate rate negotiated between the client and its counsel. So most institutional clients in an hourly context are going to require billing in increments of a tenth of an hour. We're starting to see some split that into a 20th of an hour, which is 0.05. But for this purpose, we're going to assume our client has a 0.10 minimum entry. So one of the time sinks is why time is rejected or cut. So they're not pre-approved by the client. If you do a task that's not pre-approved, that requires it, you might get your time cut. Tasks are not billable per the fee agreement. For example, they won't pay for internal meetings. Maybe a client won't pay for drafting budgets or status letters or research. So you want to be aware of what trigger words may exist within the fee agreement. And sometimes within a client's fee software that reviews it and may pre-kick out certain words or time entries that contain those words. Also, time billed is excessive. For example, your client may pre-limit 5 hours for a motion, and if you bill 6 hours for it, it may kick it out. It may kick out that extra hour. Client may consider a certain task unnecessary. A client may consider a certain task that an attorney billed as a paralegal task. Some examples are doc review, medical review, preparing form interrogatories. You want to know these in advance. If the client's only going to pay a paralegal rate for something, that's probably a task that should be delegated to a paralegal. And a big one is that a task is not adequately explained in the narrative. And this presentation will focus on some ways to avoid that and make sure all your time goes forward and is approved by the client. One of the reasons that's important is because appealing the rejected time entry can be a time sink. If you spend a half hour chasing a 0.3, you can't capture that half hour back. So that time is rejected, that time is lost. Even if you get the 0.3 approved on appeal, you've wasted a half hour of otherwise billable time tracking that. And if after the appeal, the 0.3 is still rejected, then you've lost 0.8 hours. So better practice is to enter your time correctly the first time and avoid the rejection, avoid the appeal process. And we do that by focusing on the elements of the time entry. The first part's easy, that's the hours element. That allows us to quantify the time spent, that's the number, and that is the actual time spent and the value added to the case or client. The more nuanced portion is the narrative element. That's where we specify what you did, why you did it, and importantly, how it adds value to the case or client. Without that value, it's very difficult to get paid. So we're going to justify that. We talked about tenths of an hour. Let's take a look at that in depth. Mathematically, it sounds like that's 6 minutes, but we have to round up, especially if the client's not going to allow us to split tenths of an hour. So 0.10 is not technically 6 minutes. It's anything greater than 1 second up to 6 minutes. So 5 minutes, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute, still 0.10. So we have to ask ourselves, is that short task adding value to the case? Is the client going to pay that? We can use discretion when billing for quick tasks, and there may be some short things we're not going to bill for. For example, client emails you back, thank you. We don't need to bill for that. So let's go into detail into the narrative. Narrative is basically syntax is everything. That's the syntax. There's going to be a rhythm you get into. When I grew up, Mad Libs was really big in elementary school. You'd fill in the blank, add a verb, add a noun, add something, and you got a result. And I think of time entries as the same way. We're going to verb the noun because of the basis and then with an optional kicker. And the basis for doing so is the justification and why it adds value to the case. So you fill in the blanks with recognized terms for efficient billing to avoid rejected entries. We have a lot of terms to go over and get into our repertoire. The narrative starts with verbs. Verbs, of course, we all know are action words. Action equals value. It's what they pay. It's what the client pays us for. It's why we went to law school. There's five key verbs you'll probably use in 90 to 95% of your time entries. Follow the mnemonic TREAD if you need to. Most of these should be familiar to us. Telephone calls, review, evaluate, attend, or draft. I want to focus on evaluate, though that is a very value-adding term. It's real easy to bill for what we review and bill for what we draft, but we often miss out on the evaluating. So we throw that in there, and as long as we tread, we're going to add value to the case. Verbs are easy. Nouns, we want to make sure that we're telling our client who we're speaking with, what we are reviewing, what we are evaluating, what we are attending, and what we drafted. And as we start to add value, we can add more specificity. We'll go into some details on that in a minute. We want to make sure it's a telephone call to opposing counsel. It's a telephone call from opposing counsel. We reviewed plaintiff's motion. Which motion? Motion for summary judgment, motion in limine. And notice I put in plaintiffs there. If we just say review motion 1.5, it's probably not going to get paid. If we say review plaintiff's motion in limine, explain the number of pages, et cetera, that will get paid because that adds value to the case. After the verb and the noun, there's the basis. This is the key. This is the guts of the time entry because that gives us an opportunity to describe how that task adds value to the case. Telephone call to client, telephone call to opposing counsel by itself probably doesn't add as much value as telephone call to opposing counsel to confirm dismissal. Draft correspondence to opposing counsel to confirm dismissal. Follow up with chambers, et cetera. Maybe we made a telephone call with opposing counsel or we set up a joint defense call. We want to let the client know that that was to achieve prompt resolution of matter. for purposes of encouraging settlement in preparation for hearing? Why did you review 1,000 pages of medical records? To prepare for the doctor's deposition, to prepare for trial, to prepare for a hearing on the motion to compel. Always let the client know why you're doing it, why it adds value to the case. Sometimes we just want to justify why a task was required. It was authorized by the client is the easy one. Make sure you have that in writing. That is more billable task. That also going to add value to your case. We also want to justify why we filed something. It was ordered by the court. We didn't just get bored and see we didn't have enough hours and we prepared a joint status report. No, we spent time preparing a joint status report because it was ordered by the court. We prepared a separate affidavit of counsel because it was required by local custom and procedure. We created a supplemental discovery disclosure because we recently received documents. And you can be specific on those documents as well to disclose recently received medical records of plaintiff, to disclose recently produced documents, or to disclose documents recently produced pursuant to order granting our motion to compel. Don't be afraid to let the client know where you were successful, because success adds value to the case. It moves the case forward, brings it closer to resolution. That's something clients look for, and those items are much less likely to be scrutinized, challenged, and rejected by the client. So if it's early in the case, you can evaluate some things to facilitate early resolution of a contested matter, even if it's not in litigation yet. Anything to show the client why you should be paid, and why it added value to the case. That's going to be a constant theme throughout. At the end of the time entry, you have some optional kickers. These help justify a larger time spent for certain value, for certain entries. And that's because it adds more value to the case. I have some examples here and related tasks. Maybe you drafted a letter to the client regarding settlement offer. And that may be a point two, point three entry. But if you also let the client know that certain deadlines are coming up and there's some other events the client needs to know about, some other authority you're requesting or some other recommendations, you can just put there and related tasks. One thing people talk to me about is they often see their time entries as being longer than the item they're drafting or reviewing or thinking about. And so using some of these kickers with specific and general language as appropriate can help limit that, and it makes it easier to enter your time. Also, and I go through at the end some shortcuts, you can put in some shortcuts on these and add these, and you want to vary it throughout. If you put and related tasks at the end of every time entry, client's going to start to get suspicious. So use what's appropriate. And here's some examples and related tasks and related issues. Prepare same for filing, appropriate timing of same, evaluate propriety of same, evaluate further handling in light of same, and evaluate appropriate response for same. I put evaluate in brackets on the chart because that may depend on the context. You can draft letter to a client regarding something. So you want to evaluate it when you review it and then explain it to the client. And so using some of these can show you a progression. And there's some examples. If you're just reviewing Billy Joe's joinder to Bobby Sue's motion for summary judgment, for example, that may just be a point two. It's just a joinder. There's not a lot going on. You think about it a little bit and move on. However, if it starts to change the dynamic in the litigation, then maybe if you review Billy Joe's joinder and evaluate effect of same, now it goes from a point two to a point three or more. You can extend that again. Maybe we review Billy Joe's joinder to Bobby Sue's motion for summary judgment and evaluate further handling in light of same. It's a point four now. maybe Billy Joe's joinder changes the dynamic. Maybe he was on your side, and his joinder now suggests he may be opposed to your position, or vice versa. More thinking time. The document itself may be a one-page document, but it opens the door to a lot of evaluation. And don't be afraid to make that evaluation a separate entry if it's important enough, if it goes beyond the 0.3, 0.4, maybe 0.5 is the upper threshold. And then the last example in the progression, review and evaluate Billy Joe's joinder to Bobby Sue's motion for summary judgment. Evaluate appropriate same at upcoming settlement conference. That's starting to border on needing to be a separate time entry. So don't be afraid to make a separate time entry, but using these kickers can progress us from a very short time entry, meaning a document that doesn't have a lot of meat on it, that doesn't really trigger a lot of evaluation, a lot of attorney time, a lot of value, to something that can be more important, it's more crucial. And if it's that important, it may trigger a memo to the file, a letter to the client. You may need to update the status. You may need to evaluate your position. You may need to respond to it. And all of those items are separately billable because they add value to the case. So using those kickers can get you from a 0.2 to a 0.3 to a 0.4 to a 0.5 under the circumstances when appropriate. I want to talk a lot about block billing. Block billing is very important. A lot of clients, especially institutional clients, will reject block billing. So what is block billing? It's the combination of multiple unrelated tasks in a single time entry. There's some examples: telephone call with client regarding status of case, draft motion in limine, review correspondence from opposing counsel. And I've put there a 4.70 time entry, and that may be how much time we spent on all three items, but they're unrelated and probably should be separate entries. In fact, they definitely should be separate entries, and they're likely to be rejected by the client, whether the client uses automated billing review software or it's a manual review by your client. You're going to want to avoid that. Another example, review motion for summary judgment and draft correspondence to client regarding same. It's a little more related because both entries relate to the motion for summary judgment. However, better practice would be to avoid the block billing and make separate entries. Few institutional clients will allow it, and each major verb should be a separate entry. Now, my focus is on a major verb. Evaluate, as we talked about, can be a kicker. However, block billing is a sliding scale. That's going to vary by client. Each client may define block billing in a slightly different manner. For example, especially those that use billing review software, any conjunction, and, but, or punctuation, looking at commas and semicolons, may flag a particular narrative as a block billing. And when that's the case, they reject the entire thing. You have to go through the editing process, the appeal process. We talked about that being a time sink. And what's going to happen is you're going to lose time by having to re-enter it. So better practice is to enter it right the first time and avoid block billing. Now, some clients that review it manually may focus on how related the tasks are. So let's compare draft motion for summary judgment and evaluate appropriate exhibits for same, which are more related, with draft motion for summary judgment and telephone call to client regarding discovery responses. The first example, both relate to the motion for summary judgment. That may not be block billing as long as the client or its software does not flag it as such based on the use of the word and, with draft motion for summary judgment and telephone call regarding something else. But it is better to err on the side.
Esquire CLE's first verification code is ASH. A-S-H, all lowercase, ASH. Please take a moment and write this down. Esquire CLE's first verification code is ASH, A-S-H, all lowercase, ASH. Please take a moment and write this down.
...of no block billing and make separate entries when possible. I call that bucket billing. Put everything in a separate bucket and bill them separately. So by compartmentalizing your time, you can add more value to the case. Here's some narrative examples. Telephone call to opposing counsel regarding proposed changes to terms of settlement agreement and related issues. And that seems to add a lot of value to the case, and as long as the and related issues doesn't flag it as block billing per the client, that shows a lot of value and should get paid. Draft motion for summary judgment as authorized by Jay Smith and prepare same for filing. Whenever we draft something, we want to show that it was approved by the client. We sent a letter to the client seeking such approval. That's a billable event. The client gave us the approval. That gives our backup in case the time is rejected. Attend hearing on motion for summary judgment and related tasks. Review plaintiff's offer of judgment and evaluate propriety of same. Offer of judgment is another example of a document that may be a page long, but adds much more value than just the four corners of that document. We may need to evaluate the propriety of the offer of judgment. We may need to evaluate its effect on our litigation strategy, its effect on our discovery strategy, obviously our effect on our settlement strategy. Maybe we want to get into an early mediation. It triggers a lot of events that are going to move that case forward that are going to add value. And so by being specific, we can do that. Here's a lot of examples of how we can add value. And I want to cover the value triangle. You may have seen this in other contexts. I think this may be in the back office of factories, fast food restaurants, any restaurant. I even saw it in the back of a theater one time. It basically goes good, fast, cheap. You can pick any two. But we're attorneys. We went to law school, so we don't say cheap. We're going to say inexpensive. And in a litigation or transactional context, the client cannot sacrifice time because there's deadlines. Contracts have to be performed by a particular time. Purchases need to be made at a particular time. Litigation is driven by deadlines, scheduling orders. Motions are due a certain time. Discovery closes at a certain time. Likewise, the client cannot sacrifice quality. Your firm has standards. The ABA gives us standards. We're not going to produce low quality work. We have obligations to the court, to the client. We have ethical standards. Therefore, those are the two that the client has picked, fast and good. So the client must pay accordingly for timely quality representation and work product that adds value to the case or client. And that applies in litigation, that applies in transactions, mergers, maybe you're drafting a helicopter lease, all of these apply. So those are the two. And so we need to explain to the client why we added value and why they are not getting it inexpensively. We explain that value in the narrative. We talked about it at the beginning. I want to repeat that because it's something that's going to be beaten into our heads and just going to roll naturally through our fingertips onto the keyboard as we enter our time throughout the day. Verb the noun because of the justification and or kicker. And the more time we spend on an item, meaning the more time we bill for an activity, the longer and more descriptive the narrative should be. And again, we can make it descriptive without adding significant length if we use certain keywords and kickers. We want to justify that work performed. Authority, Was it required? The purpose of it? Is it goal-oriented? The main goal at a case-wide view is to move the case forward towards resolution. Resolution may be mediation, it may be settlement, it may be trial, it may be appeal, it may be 5 years away, but we're moving the case forward, and that's the value we give the client. However, there may be minor goals as well. You want to win the battles as well as the war. So the goal-oriented may be to get your motion granted, to get a deposition on calendar, to get the other side to be required to produce a document, or maybe you're investigating a fact. And if you can establish that fact, that helps your case. So you want to justify that and put that in the entry. We also want to justify the amount billed, especially if it's abnormal. We're going to do that with specificity, and we're going to do that in the entry by letting the client know that these medical records we spent 4.5 hours reviewing were 250 pages. Or 1,250 pages. Don't be afraid to put that in the time entry. The more specific you can be, sometimes that helps you. We want to show the client the results. Don't be afraid to pat yourself on the back in not just the status letter where you say, we're pleased to report, we successfully moved for summary judgment. You want to put that in your time entry as well. Prepare a letter to client regarding order granting our motion for summary judgment. Again, success adds value and necessity adds value. So we're going to explain that. Sometimes, however, ambiguity adds value. We don't want our time entries for lawyers to look or resemble secretarial tasks. In those cases, we want to be vague. Enclosure letters are boring. They do not add value to a case. Give you an example. Draft letter to client enclosing order of dismissal. That sounds boring. It's a secretarial task. I wouldn't be surprised if the client or its billing software kicked it as an enclosure letter. However, draft status letter to client regarding order of dismissal. Now it sounds important. Here's an order of dismissal. Here's what it means. Here's what we need to do. When you add value, your time does not get kicked. Scheduling is something else that's boring. It sounds secretarial. It does not add value to the case. I'll give you an example. Draft letter to opposing counsel to schedule plaintiff's deposition. If the client looks at that entry and says, well, that's something your secretary can do, that's overhead, that I don't need a lawyer to do that, they may not make payment. And if that time gets rejected, you're going to have a hard time justifying that. However, drafting letter to opposing counsel regarding deposition of plaintiff is vague enough to sound like attorney work that adds value to the case. That's something you actually did, and you can be more likely to have that time entry approved and have that time captured. So in some cases, it's better to be ambiguous. More often, however, it's better to be specific. If you're in a hearing, court's going to sometimes that takes 10 minutes, sometimes that takes hours. So a client may have expectations and you want to meet that. And when you go beyond what the client expects, you need to be specific to explain that. So if you expect a half hour hearing and it goes long and it's 2.5 hours, maybe you're waiting for a while because the hearing before you runs long, put that in the time entry. You don't have to be generic. You can be specific when you need to. Review plaintiff's recently produced medical records to prepare for plaintiff's deposition. Maybe it's a case and you're constantly getting medical records. So let the client know which ones. Maybe these relate to a new doctor he's seeing. Maybe these relate to subsequent treatment, recent treatment. Don't be afraid to spell that out there and let the client know that you're not just reviewing old records that likely you had previously billed for. Attend court-ordered status conference. If you have to do something because it's ordered by the court, the client's much less likely to cut that time. Draft motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction. Again, you want to be specific. You don't just draft a motion to dismiss. You draft motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction. You got motion to dismiss based on whatever. Also, don't be afraid to include as authorized by client and put the client's name there. And then page count, again, I have to emphasize this. The client's going to wonder why there's a big entry of time, a big block of time. And again, blocks are triggers. So if you spent 4.5 hours billing something, put voluminous medical records. Maybe most of the medical records are 20 pages, and then you got a big data dump of 1,200 pages before the depot. You have to go through it. Put that in parentheses, put term voluminous, and then specify I retained them via subpoena. Now, these were produced pursuant to order denying protective order. These were produced pursuant to order granting motion to compel. Add all that specificity in your entry, because that's going to show the value you added to the case. Regarding also adds specificity. We talked earlier that the term regarding can be vague. Regarding can also be add some specificity. Specificity adds value. The word regarding itself is open-ended. And here's some examples. Regarding outstanding discovery responses. Maybe you're drafting a letter to opposing counsel. Well, if the client sees an entry draft correspondence to opposing counsel 1.6, that's going to come back to your desk and you're going to have to spend additional time, probably months later, to figure out what letter that was. So by being specific in the first place, we can be more efficient and save time. Draft letter to opposing counsel regarding outstanding discovery responses. Draft letter to client regarding dismissal and finality of same. Maybe you're evaluating something. Regarding appropriate exhibits. Regarding plaintiff's deposition. Regarding proposed changes to terms of settlement agreement. Again, you're being specific to a document, but you don't have to be specific to an amount. You don't have to say, regarding plaintiff's proposed changes to terms of settlement agreement related to indemnity provision, related to confidentiality provision. But you do want to let the client know that these time entries relate to the settlement agreement. So use the term regarding. And again, toward the end, I have a lot of abbreviations to make some time entries. RE is the common abbreviation for the term regarding. You just put RE space and these will fill out for themselves. Specificity, people add value. I like to give their title and their name. That helps not only add value in the first place, but makes it real easy to track down in the event the time is rejected and we have to appeal. So telephone call to client looks okay. Telephone call to claims handler T. Jones is more specific. Telephone call to expert M. Smith, and maybe you have multiple experts in a case. So maybe telephone call to safety expert M. Smith. Telephone call to medical expert M. Smith. And be more specific if you have multiple medical experts. Maybe you have an orthopedist and a neurosurgeon. You can put that in there. Telephone call to neuro expert M. Smith regarding recently received medical records. Treating physician, opposing counsel. You can abbreviate opposing counsel OC, but I like to add opposing counsel's last name. It shows it adds value to the case. If you're dealing with a firm where opposing counsel may have three or four different people that you're dealing with, depending on the case, maybe the partner, maybe the associate on the other end, and so you want to be vague. Otherwise, you can be specific. And that's going to add value and help get you paid and avoid your time being rejected. You can also add value when you interact with support staff. Telephone calls to chambers and paralegals and phone calls with runners sound secretarial and may not be paid by the client. However, these are often important interactions that require an attorney. So we can use terms such as chambers, opposing counsel's office, and attorney service. Maybe you're talking with your runner or the process server, and you need to give them the address or the gate code or a description, they're calling you and they need information to get something served or delivered. Maybe you're following up with Chambers on the form of a proposed order. Those are all lawyer functions that you need to handle, and using the keywords in your time entry is going to make your task sound more lawyer-like than secretarial. That's going to make it more likely to get paid and less likely to be rejected. So you also add value with separate entries. Again, break up a block billing into separate buckets. And you're going to find that with appropriate kickers, you end up capturing more of that time. If you enter a block bill, besides the fact that it's likely to get cut, you may be self-censoring your time under this magic 5.0 limit. You want to keep it under a 4.9, but maybe the motion itself took a 4.9, and evaluate redacting the exhibits 1.70 and then drafting a separate affidavit in support of that motion. Maybe that's authorized by the client. Maybe that's required by court. Maybe that's something you've discussed. By putting each bucket separately, you're going to capture more of your time. And instead of billing 0.5 for something that took you all day, you end up getting closer to that 7 or 8 hours. I want to talk about brevity as well. Brevity is the soul of wit. Sometimes you're going to bill more for a document that's shorter than billing for a document that's longer. Courts are not going to get excited about a 50-page motion for summary judgment. I've had judges hold them out in their hand as if they were weighing it, saying, I don't know, it looks like an issue of fact here. And while we all know that's not the legal standard, we want to be as brief as possible when sending anything to the court or opposing counsel and in general. And give you some examples. Mark Twain said, if you want me to give you a 2-hour presentation, I'm ready today. If you want only a 5-minute speech, it'll take me 2 weeks to prepare. There's similar examples from Thoreau and Cicero. So what we want to talk about is focusing more on the time and the value we spent on the document than the actual work product. So don't be afraid to bill more for a shorter document if it took you more time to get there. I could paste a 50-page motion together in probably 20 minutes. I don't think it's likely to be granted, and it's certainly not going to be quality work product. So don't be afraid to capture that time it takes to edit, to parse down, to proofread, and to make your arguments stronger. That's all good lawyer time, and that adds value. So capture that. Correspondence also adds value. So you want to bill separately for unrelated emails. I'll give you an example. Opposing counsel sends you an email regarding settlement instructions or settlement offer, more likely, and then opposing counsel sends you another email regarding sending a deposition or a discovery dispute. I'm going to bill for each one separately because they all have their own analysis, and each adds its own value to the case. And when I bill emails, I don't use that term. It's communication. It's correspondence. And I want to make that sound more formal because that adds more value. Emails, and now we're seeing text messages. And if you allow opposing counsel to send you a text message, I encourage you to bill that as communication or correspondence, because that's going to sound more formal. Formality adds more value to the case and allows you to justify your time. Emails, and especially text messages, sound very quick and dirty, and not a 0.3, not a 0.4. But when you're sitting at a keyboard and you're typing a document that's going to take some time to evaluate, that's going to justify more time. So be cautious when billing for that, and just call them correspondence. Client communications are important. We have an ABA model rule 1.4 that requires us to communicate with your client. And unless the client billing guidelines as set forth in the retainer agreement say we're not going to pay for client communications, external communications, You want to make sure that you capture your time. And you can do that by forwarding all documents for client approval. That allows you to bill for time spent requesting the authority to file, bill for receiving the approval to prepare that document. And oftentimes there's red line changes or suggestions or questions, and you have to make revisions and start the process over. And that all adds value to the case. It makes the motion or settlement agreement better, more palatable to the client, more likely to do what we need. And so that's all billable. We want to make sure that gets captured. So all that communication adds value. Also, appearances add value to a case. Remember, we're not going to block bill. So if you attend the hearing and that's an hour and a half, and then you have a correspondence with, I'm sorry, if you have a meeting with counsel afterwards and they take you aside in the hallway and say, hey, maybe we can settle this, or hey, what's going on with this discovery dispute? Make a separate entry for that. Also, make a separate entry for evaluating the file in preparation for the hearing. I like to review a lot of documents. I like to prepare myself a short outline. That's all billable, and that's all saved in the file in case the time gets rejected or in case you get audited. That is confirmed in writing. Also, bill for post-mortem report as well. You get back to the office. The first thing you want to do is jot down your notes, put that in a memorandum to file. You want to let the client know what happened. That's probably a phone call. If I have really good news or often really bad news, you want to call your client first. Hey, I just want to let you know hearing didn't go well. I don't know what the judge was thinking, but he seemed to have concerns over X, Y, Z. Here's what I think we should do. And then put that in the status letter. Those are all billable. Those are all important. And client communication adds value to the case. And then depending on your client billing guidelines, you want to bill for your travel time or not, and that's usually non-local travel time. You want to know that. Next, I want to go into some efficiencies that'll help us. We start with the Pareto principle, which comes to us from the world of statistics and business, and basically states that for many events, roughly 80% of the effects come from 20% of the causes. And there's numerous examples. If you're a business, 80% of your revenue may come from 20% of your customers. 80% of your sales may come from 20% of your items. For attorneys, 80% of our time is probably spent on 20% of our cases. Probably have the big five or the big 10 that are taking most of your time. You may have 100 cases, but really be only spending time on 20 of them. 80% of your rejected time comes from 20% of your clients. 80% of your time entries use 20% of the verbs. That's why we start with the big five verbs. And so understanding that gives us five rules of thumb. The first one, these are aspirational, but I try to bill 10 hours a day. We'll go over how to do that. Rule two, bill for actual time spent and value added to a case or client. Rule three, almost everything you do is billable if you word it appropriately. Rule four, value all your time, all the time. And rule five, everything worth billing is worth billing at least 0.24. And how do you bill 10 hours a day? Well, I like to break up my day. I like to take a lunch. I like to get out of the office. So I try to bill 5 hours before lunch, 5 hours after lunch. Clean out your inbox. You may have 30, 40 emails in your inbox. Get them cleaned out. Bill for reviewing them, bill for doing whatever needs to be done, file them wherever. Your other inbox is your voicemail. Make sure you answer those calls. They're billable. I like to take calls. If I'm in the office at lunch and I get a phone call, I like to take it because it's billable and it helps me avoid phone tag. Bird in the hand's worth more than two in the bush. So if I can get a hold of somebody, I like to take advantage of that opportunity. Then your third inbox is your calendar. Take a look at it. Look 2 or 3 days ahead. Go through your case list daily. Like I said, you probably have up to 100 or more cases. I like to review that daily, and I like to go deep weekly. Follow up. Why is this case still here? What does it need? It needs attention. It needs something. I'm waiting for something. So maybe it's a phone call. Phone call to the court. Hi, my motion's been pending. Is there anything you need from us? Do you need a proposed order? Follow up on a discovery request. Some case, every case needs a phone call or an email or something. And if you touch every case at least once a month, review it once a week, you're going to capture more time, and that'll help you meet that. Rules 2 and 3 are pretty straightforward. I want to jump to rule 4, value your time. Don't cut your own time. Maybe you spent 8 hours on a motion and you feel embarrassed. It shouldn't have taken you that much time. Don't be afraid. Put that, explain why, explain the value, and let the client cut it or let the partner cut it. The last thing you want is for you to cut your time down to 5, have the partner cut it down to 4.7, and then have the client then cut it down to 3.5. You're much better off billing your actual time and justifying for it. There are some exceptions. I like to cut my time as a courtesy to the client when I'm just not, and when it's not on me. An example, I attend a lengthy hearing on a motion to compel because there was an unusually long docket. And if I was there for almost 3 hours, maybe I'm going to throw the client a bone and let them know that, hey, I'm reducing this from 2.7 to 1.6. Client's going to like that. And a little bit of goodwill goes a long way. I don't want to overbill one case and end up losing the client. I want them to go, hey, I've got a new case. Make sure you send it to Colt because I like the way he handles things. And that's going to pay out in the end. And then reconsider the value of non-billable tasks. If you're doing something that's not billable, maybe you don't need to do it. Allows you to focus on billable events and something that's going to add more value to the case. And then the exception to Rule 5, which is if it's worth billing, it's worth billing a 0.2 for, is junk mail, documents that add no value to the case. Notice of change of address, thank you emails, administrative court notice, court's going to be down, their service is going to be down Saturday for e-filing. Do we need to really bill those? Sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. And it's very important to note the difference. I don't like to waste my time.
Esquire CLE's second verification code is PAD, P-A-D, all lowercase, PAD. Please take a moment and write this down. Esquire CLE's second verification code is PAD, P-A-D, all lowercase, PAD. Please take a moment and write this down.
I'm reviewing junk mail. If I need to review it, I'll bill a 0.1 and move on. Just enter a quick review, blah, blah, blah. No kickers, no justification. But if it doesn't add value to the case, I'm not going to bill for it. My client doesn't want to see a bill padded with reviewing a lot of junk. So some exceptions there. And then time management. You don't want to spend an entire day or more entering your time for the month. And what I mean by that is a lot of people just take notes mentally or on paper. And then at about 11 at night, the last day of the month, trying to scatter and enter time. But it's much more efficient to enter your time in real time throughout the day. I always have ProLaw open. And if I'm on the phone with the client, as soon as I get off the phone, I make that time entry, do whatever memo to the file I need, prepare whatever I need, and enter my time. If I'm out of the office at a hearing, first thing I do when I get to the office is I enter my time in ProLaw, call the client, let them know what happened, et cetera. So if I'm on the phone, you can enter that. And if I'm drafting a motion or a letter, I want to bill for that when I do it. You're more likely to remember, and you're more likely to get that time captured. So know the client's billing guidelines. It's different for every client. SAS letters may be billable for some, not billable for others. Budgets, there is an L code for that, but some clients won't pay for that, even though they're going to require budgets, maybe quarterly, maybe yearly, maybe at the beginning of the case. So you want to know what's billable and what's not, so you can adjust your time accordingly. Same thing with travel time. You don't want to spend time tracking down whether how long it took you to drive to court because you included your travel time in that time entry if it's not billable. Know what needs prior approval and get it. Dear client, we have a hearing on appeals. It's at it's in San Francisco before the Ninth Circuit. It's going to require lodging, et cetera. Get that pre-approved. Get that letter in the file. So you can do that. I like to make a little chart. Here's a cheat sheet. Maybe it's your top three clients. If you have a number of clients, maybe you want to run them down the y-axis and put the tasks across the x. But what's billable? What's not? What are thresholds? What do we need to do? Do they need approval, et cetera? That's costs as well. Another task is always be evaluating. I like to bill beyond the paper, the processing time, I call it. It's real easy to bill to review a document and bill to draft a document, but a lot of lawyer time, a lot of what we went to law school for is the thinking time in between, and you want to make sure you capture that. Evaluate is your key verb for that. One of its brothers is strategize, and you want to use those to capture your time. Maybe you took a shower Saturday afternoon and it all of a sudden your brain was clear and you thought of a great argument or you thought of something to include in your motion or your status letter. And so you want to capture that time. And what I do is I'll just pull out my phone and shoot myself an email to remind me of not only the fact, but to bill for that as well. Give you an example, evaluate potential standing argument regarding plaintiff's position on X. And that way, when I get back to the office, I have that and I've captured that time. Telephone calls, if you call someone at least once a week on every case, it'll help you meet your hours. I like to memorialize every call in writing. There's typically three letters. This will confirm, please be advised, and enclosed, please find. I like to do that. Bill separately for return telephone calls. Almost every telephone call can generate at least an hour of billing. A 4-second phone call probably required you to spend 15 minutes or so thinking about what you're going to say. Half the time you're going to leave a voicemail, so you want to rehearse that ahead of time. We want to sound as professional as possible, even on someone's voicemail. So prepare for phone calls, confirming letters after the phone calls, memorandums to file, often evaluate the effect of the phone call. I'm not just going to get off the phone with opposing counsel and call my client right back. I need to think about it, evaluate it, and those tasks are all billable. And we want to navigate billing pitfalls. Clients look at these at both the micro level, which we've been talking about, but there's also a macro level. If you spend all day working on one case, your time is probably not captured as much as if you had touched perhaps 20 cases or 8 or 5. So I like to spread out billing on active cases over several days. I also like to keep an eye on how much I billed on a particular case in 1 month. If the client sees you're billing about an hour to two a month, and all of a sudden in the next month you've billed 20 hours, it's a shock to the client. And in order to manage the client's expectations, I like to spread depositions out. Sometimes you can't help it. Depositions had to go on a certain time based on availability. The court scheduled a hearing. The court ordered a show cause and required a joint status report, and all these things hit at once. So if you can spread out what you can, you're more less likely to get time rejected. The client may not bat an eye if you bill 4 or 10 hours on a month, but when it starts to exceed 15 or 20, you're going to need explanations. And even if the time gets paid, you may be called in to draft a letter to the client to accompany the bill to let them know in advance so they don't suffer a shock. And that letter itself, because it relates to time and is client related, is probably not billable. And so to avoid wasting time on non-billable events, you want to try to avoid these shocks. So I like to touch multiple cases, and you want to obtain client approval in writing, save it in the file. That's going to not only help you get that entry paid. Maybe you spent 42 hours drafting an appellate brief on very complex issues, but you also have that in writing. And of course, the time spent requesting that is billable because that's client communication. I like to avoid billing time in even amounts because it looks like block billing. We talked earlier about a 4.5 entry to review medical records. Maybe that's a 4.4, 4.6. It's less likely to be scrutinized. I don't like to enter in even hours. So avoiding trigger words. Again, we want to not sound secretarial. We also want to avoid anything that's specifically rejected by the client. Cover letters. You don't see much of that anymore. That's enclosed. Please find a copy. A lot of firms will draft a cover letter with everything enclosed. Please find our 15th supplemental disclosure statement. Clients typically won't pay for that. You see a lot of firms still doing that. I like the cover letters become status letters, or it's a letter regarding, or it may just be easier to not send a letter at all. Some clients won't pay for anything that's related to scheduling because that sounds secretarial. So that's a discovery order. Research, if that's not billable, you may need to evaluate. That may be baked into the time spent drafting the motion. Meetings, a lot of clients won't pay for internal meetings. So maybe those become evaluation. If I go to the partner and ask a question, and we have a 15-20 minute discussion on the parole evidence rule or something like that, I can't bill for meeting with partner regarding parole evidence rule. So I go back to the office, I prepare a memo to file, and I bill, evaluate potential use of parole evidence rule in opposing the motion. By evaluating it, I can avoid the trigger word and again, focus on the value. Conferences. A lot of clients won't pay for conferences. Again, that sounds internal, that sounds secretarial, that might not be billable. So conferences and meetings, sometimes that can be a hearing. In a lot of courts, a lot of jurisdictions, the judge will set a scheduling conference, which itself has two trigger words. So you might want to change that to be a discovery hearing in order to navigate the trigger word to get that time paid. So it's important. We talked earlier about a chart. You may want to include those trigger words in a chart, and you may want to avoid that because if those get kicked, you may spend time either on the pre-bill stage revising it, or worse, the time gets rejected and you have to track down and do that, and that's time away from your day. We also want to avoid some myths and unethical tricks. The old myth was this imaginary rule of thumb that you build 0.4 per page. I want to refer you to rule 2 and ABA model rule 8.46. Our rule 2 talks about billing for actual time spent. ABA model rule talks about misrepresentation. And so there's two sides to this. We talked earlier on the one side that it may take longer to draft a shorter document than to draft a longer document. Editing, processing, following a really good, concise IRAC that the judge can get a hold of and like and consider may be better than just a 50-page rambling diatribe. On the other hand, there's form motions and things that we want to make sure we're capturing the time that we spent on something. If you file the same motion in limine in every case, and it's a copy and paste, you can't really bill the client 6 hours every time. You bill for your time spent. So customizing the document, shepherdizing the cases, make sure the cases you've been relying on for years haven't been overruled. Maybe there's better cases, more recent published cases, cases specific to your jurisdiction. You want to spend that time, which may be more or less than 0.4 per page. So focus more on the actual time than an artificial guideline. I also still see this in documents where there's ways to artificially add length to the document, adding a redundant introduction section. You might see a 2 or 3 page introduction that probably could be a 1 paragraph or less introduction. And I always said, if you can't explain your case in 2 sentences or less to your grandma, you don't understand your case. And courts don't want to see a rambling diatribe, so we don't need to artificially inflate the length of a document. Adding the word C before every case, if you look at the blue book, that signal usually is accompanied by a parenthetical. You don't need a parenthetical in every case, especially if you've adequately briefed it in a nice, concise IRAC. Lengthy footnotes, string citations, block quotes. You don't need to block quote a 16-paragraph statute if only one section is appropriate. So being concise requires editing, requires legal thought and analysis, and that is billable. You don't have to make an overly long document just to justify your time. Headings, I see headings broken out number of ways. Extra lines, if you did that in a document with a lot of subheadings, that could add an entire page to the document, and you don't need to do that just to justify billing an extra point for bill for your actual time. Capitalize on your firm's billing software. We have a number of shortcuts. ProLaw and other software allow you to have abbreviations. So, for example, on the verbs, DCT can become draft correspondence too. DC or CF could be received correspondence from, TCT, telephone call to, et cetera. RAs, review and evaluate. Maybe you draft a lot of monthly status letters, so you can abbreviate that MSL, and it'll spit right out, draft monthly status letter to. Maybe your client likes them to be called status reports or interim status reports. You can make abbreviations to fit each client. So entries that you make maybe dozens of times a day, maybe hundreds or thousands of times over the month, can become abbreviations, and you can spend less time entering your time and more time working on your cases. You can also use them on nouns. OC is opposing counsel, PF is plaintiff, DF is defendant, claims handler, courts chambers. If you're sending emails to the same client a lot, you can make an abbreviation. JL, for example, claims handler John Lincoln. I don't think I've typed the phrase motion for summary judgment in years. You can also add these same abbreviations to your Microsoft Office in the autocorrect. DOT becomes deed of trust, MSJ, MTD for motion to dismiss, MIL, motion in limine. Allows you to save time and focus on more lawyer-like analysis. You can also use them for frequently used phrases. All the kickers can be abbreviated, auth, and then your ProLaw software will put as authorized by, and then you can put JL, J. Lincoln. So 4 keystrokes you've entered and further handling, I'm sorry, and authorized by John Lincoln. Even long ones. EFH can become an evaluate further handling in light of the same. If you're going to reduce some time, you can add a time entry to that. So I'd like to wrap up that by being aware of everything you do and the value each task adds to the case, you can ethically and efficiently craft a specific narrative that minimizes the chance your time is rejected or cut. And by using the efficiencies, you can maximize your billing efficiency. You can spend more time moving your case forward. So you can reach me at dodrill@cox.net if you have any questions, and I appreciate it. Thank you.